This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Life can take you on some pretty strange journeys and leave you feeling a little bit twisted. Take some time to embrace the darkness so you can fully perceive the brightness of the light. Join us on Sci-Fi and Scream every Tuesday night, 10 p.m. to 11 p.m.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and we're talking to Garth Jones, of course. Been a long time coming to chat to you, Garth. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sonia. Good to be on.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And the great thing is, of course, Homebrew Vampire Bullets is what we're going to chat about.
Yep.
What it is that makes it so distinctly unique, distinctly Australian as well, a little bit of background about yourself, and why and on earth have you put together something like this comics anthology. So, Garth, yeah, welcome. Can you tell us the reason, therefore, you created this anthology?
I've been involved in the Australian scene sort of peripherally for about 10 or 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Came in doing a bit of, I met a lot of guys through old message boards back in the day, like Doug Holger, Christian Reed, Scott Fraser, and everyone sort of promised themselves they'd do an anthology at some stage, and every couple of years that would sort of become a going concern for a couple of weeks or so.
Yes.
And then it would fall away again. I started doing a bit of work with Christian a couple of years ago on our Babylon Shock story that's in the first issue and the Zero issue. We sort of got to the end of the first part, and Christian said to me, well, what are we going to do with it? Took a look around and realised we had all these great, talented people who were looking to collaborate on something, and sort of kicked it off from there. We did the all caught up in a pub, all agreed over a few beers that was something we were going to put together about May last year, sort of put the shoulder to it, and decided that's what was going to happen.
And it's been smooth riding, I guess, and
yep,
ever since.
Sort of set the date of September to get the first one out, and then we realised that was sort of may bridge too far in terms of everyone's workload and schedule.
Mm.
We decided to do the Zero issue instead to sort of get a little bit of work out there and show people what we're on about, and then sort of reset the goalposts for November, where we actually did manage to release the first one, and then sort of get ourselves onto a quarterly schedule after that.
It's a fantastic anthology or book. It's really a book as such. It's got
really,
so much
really
powerful. In it.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, you yourself, so Volume 1 came out in September 2013. How was the reception for that very first one?
Well, we released the Zero issue first, which was a taster of the of the overall book, which is about 60 pages digitally. And we had a really good response from that, a lot of lovely things coming in. And then sort of following on into one, which, you know, we had some lovely things like listed on Newsarama's Best of 2013, which was a nice surprise.
Wow, that's good.
Into the new year, hoping to get it in front of a few more mainstream outlets as well and sort of push that up.
So when you mean mainstream, what are you sort of to your direction there then?
I mean, the discussion is sort of getting book eventually into places like Magnation and doing, you know, getting us into that sort of pop culture stream of the mix of journalism and a lot of sort of art and design based creative fields like that as we sort of push forward. Mm. The next book's looking at more like it's going to be a bit about 60% prose and journalism pieces, with a little bit less in terms of overall comics content, but sort of pushing into a few more directions like the photography and graphic design and things like that.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So it's already morphing into something quite
well,
different.
Well, we're sort of still trying to work out what our, we're sort of playing it as go in terms of the format, really interested in making it a bit of a sort of political voice, having a broad range of opinion and ideas in there in that sense, getting more satire into it, sort of definitely getting a few more strong gender-related pieces in there as well. Crossing off all the things I'm interested in,
yep,
that sort of our group of friends especially is into talking about and creating work.
Sounds like turning into almost like a hub, hub for
a little bit of a cult if we get there. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
It's a pretty broad church, yeah.
Mm, okay.
It's sort of, yeah, it's becoming a bit of a monster and just sort of trying to ride it and make sure that it sort of stays on target and grows. Mm. You know, we're hoping to get it out on the quarterly schedule this year, the end of March, end of June, end of September, and sometime before Christmas, the goal. We're going to lock that in. That'll be great.
Really ambitious goal, too. Speaking of ambition and so on, and kicking goals, Garth, I'm just curious, how many of you are the established part of Homebrew Vampire Bullets? Is it yourself that's pushing most of this?
In terms of the editorial staff?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yes.
That's what I heard.
That was the conversation, yeah. I sort of, not being a megalomaniac about it, but with the project management skills and all the rest I've sort of developed with going through working in businesses, freelance, all the other sort of stuff like that, my knowledge of publishing and everything else that we've done over the years. It's not a massive ask now that we've sort of ironed out a few of the kinks in getting it out there to sort of get a, you know, publication this size together on that schedule, he says now. we'll see how that goes. But yeah, in terms of, you know, everyone's been great keeping me up to date on where they're at. We sort of touch base over Google Drive and Facebook and all the rest. Yeah, this is it's actually a relatively simple thing to put together once it's on target.
I'm looking at the website as we speak, and sure, for the Homebrew Vampire Bullets, it's very, yeah, look, you've got everything there. I just have to describe it to people. It's the colours. It's certainly got that sensibility that's very uniquely Australian, I think.
That's my aesthetic.
All the social media attachments to it. The Tumblr keeps asking me to follow it.
I don't even know that's a thing. There you go.
It says never miss a post, and I'm going, oh, okay.
It's probably sort of gained sentience anyway, and doing that by itself now.
Yeah, no, but that's good, and it's got the Facebook, the tweeting part of it, Pinterest by here. Look, it's all happening. You've got SoundCloud up there, and
definitely trying not to just sort of, you know, put a constant call to action to go and buy something in people's face. Idea is sort of giving us, as we move into the next issue and the next year, some content out there that might even just be a little bit educational or alert people to things that are going on or they might not have seen. I was in Broken Hill for 10 days over Christmas where I'm from, which is why everything's red dirt, quite burnished, the overall look. And I was talking to a guy who runs a Mad Max 2 museum out there that we'll be following up
Hence
on.
Hence the photos.
That's right, yeah. You know, just broadening a bit of people, I guess, understanding of what's even available around.
Yeah.
You might not have thought of in terms of, oh, there's a museum full of crazy cars from the early 80s out there, and push people towards those sorts of things as well.
Yeah, that brings us to the next question I do have is, what do you think makes Homebrew Vampire Bullets so uniquely Australian or Aussie? Why are you doing that? Why do you think that's important?
I see a lot of, and, you know, not having an overall ultimate view of the entire cultural landscape, but something with a, you know, some people said it's pretty distinctly masculine, but I'm sort of hoping that the book doesn't put that vibe across as we sort of move through a few issues. It was just purely a case of who was around at the time. But I don't particularly perceive it as being a overly Aussie in the Yobbo Australia Day sense of the, I do feel like there's a little bit of Australian culture that we get a little bit cringy about that is worth exploring and sort of investigating a few of those ideas. And, yeah, the, you know, the overall look and feel and the branding of the thing's obviously quite inspired by that sort of exploitation 70s and 80s aesthetic, you know, lots of beer label sort of motifs and things like that, which is sort of where my sort of default reflexes design-wise go.
Seemed to have been born from that anyway, so what you were saying earlier. And
that's
the exploitation aspect to it, look, I think that's wonderful. It really has that look about it. That does make it unique because you just do not see a lot of comic styles like that made here, because you think there's nothing wrong with things having that total global international flavour.
No, not
but
at
it
all.
Is nice to see something that you can certainly look at it and after a few, maybe 30 seconds, you realise, this is not from the United States. This is certainly not British, that's for sure. You know, this has certainly got an Australasian
sense to it. It's a bit of a happy accident that it's turned out to be, there's an educational aspect to it as well, in that, you know, friends that have sort of kept track of what we've been up to internationally have sort of come to the book and gone, oh, I didn't realise that, you know, there was this particular thing about Australian film or whatever that I can investigate more, get into, you know, your Waking Frights and your turkey shoots and your things like that, and sort of, you know, expanding people's palate a bit in that regard as well.
Yeah. No. I mean, that makes it really interesting, I think. And when I saw the Mad Max artwork recently on Facebook, I went, wow, cool, okay. Because I know the movie is coming out soon. I'm not sure what you know about that, but there's been so many problems with it getting off the ground. And
growing up with that iconography and sort of doing day trips around where all that the second film was shot, it's all sort of, you know, part of the heritage.
Of course.
And the discussion with Adrian at the museum, which I'm sort of back and forthing and getting together, he sort of had a little bit of contact with the Fury Road production. That got spiked in Australia because it was too green out there. So they headed elsewhere. So I don't think there was a lot of actual interaction with that once they decided that they couldn't CG the fauna back to the flora back to green or sepia or whatever. So quite a, you know, quite a burgeoning film culture out there as well. So that's another thing we'll sort of follow up on at some stage.
Yeah, no, that sounds very good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Duncan Cunningham at all. He did a horror film based around where he lives and very country.
Right, yeah.
Queensland, outback Queensland. And I'm going to say it, real ochre guy. You know, I interviewed him, I spoke to him, and it was just, it's so different to speak to someone like that, because you seriously, genuinely don't hear that in the film industry. You don't hear those sort of voices.
No,
you don't get that kind of viewpoint, really. And it was kind of interesting. A lot of horror made in Australia looks like it will have more of that type of connection, which is really good, I think.
And they're shooting Wolf Creek too in Burra, South Australia, about an hour and a half outside Adelaide. So that's sort of a little bit of that aesthetic as well there.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And it was great to speak to someone like him. And the funny thing is, his cousin is Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, right.
And you would not, you seriously would not think that when you spoke to him, because he does slasher films. And I said, oh, right, you won't be doing those with a musical number. And he goes, nah.
Nah, mate.
Yeah, just like that. And I thought, wow, okay.
That's I had time to actually get back from Broken Hill and get rid of my accent. So, you know, I didn't know. Just once I got back, I was running all my vowels together. And, you know, it was a bit of a mess for a while there.
But, yeah. Is that to sort of make sure that you fit in?
It's just the default setting. Once you've had about 5 or 6 days there, you're relaxed enough and
let it go. Yeah,
you all sort of start just speaking in sort of a mumbled dialect.
It's all just one word, or
it is
two,
pretty much.
Maybe two or three.
Less teeth. Cool. You definitely want to open your mouth too much.
You don't want to if it's hot, and you don't want that red dust in your mouth.
Issue.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there's
It's only practical. It's full practicality.
That's true. Well, I'm the same. Like when I go to New Zealand, or even if I'm on holiday away from work. It's funny, I can be away just for 2 or 3 weeks and I'm not around, you know, working and have to talk like what I'm talking like now, I guess. And then I go back and people go, what did you just say? Why are you sounding like a New Zealander now? It's only been 3 weeks. And I'm going, I just don't know. I don't know why. I just do.
Well, you just fall back into it.
You have to, because otherwise they don't understand you when you go back.
Right.
Yes, it is hard.
Then you get the other airs and graces element of it.
Language differences.
Oh, my God, Melbourne's changed you. Look at you.
Oh, yes.
Waistcoat. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Are those clean shoes? Yeah. Are those shoes?
Yeah, all that business. Yeah, you're wearing shoes.
So this brings me to your own background, and for those who don't know your actual work itself, I guess we've already spoken about homebrew Vampire Bullets, of course. So what do you think, I mean, what led you to take up this sort of work anyway?
Really delving back into it, growing up sort of just pre-internet in the bush, you didn't really have a great understanding of what your career paths were. I sort of was brought up considering becoming a miner, a doctor, or a lawyer, and that was it in terms of options. So I took a gap year and realised that graphic design was something that actually existed, and ended up in Sydney for studying at UWS, where I actually ended up doing classes under Jason Poloff in illustrative narrative, which sort of got the ball rolling a bit more. I was into comics and sort of had the pedigree of whatever was in the newsagent or whatever I could convince Mum to bring back from Adelaide, where there was actual comic shops, but sort of pursued that a bit more and ended up working on a couple of music-related titles early in the new millennium. The Van Halen book, which was about 100 pages of pretty solid content, which got me a little bit more into it, which sort of got me into the sort of capital city scene, going to a few conventions in Sydney mainly. Then sort of, I've freelanced around, worked in fashion, worked in a whole stack of different industries, sort of picking up bits and pieces of skills that turned out to be pretty pertinent to the getting the book done and promoting it and all the social media things and all the rest. In terms of comics, sort of dipped in and out here and there and sort of kept in touch with people, but hadn't really done anything substantial until we got back together and sort of decided to do this book. A little bit of a sort of gypsy-like career path. Sort of ended up here at the moment working in film and doing this thing.
That's interesting.
I work on film posters and DVDs during the day, which is a bit of a gimme as well. So.
That's a bit different too. Yeah. That's quite different departure, going from wanting to be a doctor or a miner to being an artist. That's a little bit,
an inverted commas artist, yeah.
Oh, you don't think of yourself like that?
Oh, I think there's an element of pragmatism to a lot of this.
Well,
I think that might be sort of going home and explaining what you do never works out too well.
Okay.
Don't quite get that.
No, yeah. I guess not. But when they see the finished product, though.
I think there's interesting things to be said, and definitely there's a message and a viewpoint there that's, we're keen to expand. And
I guess
looking at, in a macro sense, that's all, that's definitely a voice emerging at least.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. Now, looking at the future, you've got the big release for the next book in March.
In March, we're hoping to do a launch, just sort of getting a few ideas nailed down for sometime around Easter, hopefully, with that. Yeah, we're happy. We are pretty excited. We got Tony Martin from the DGen to do a intro for us as Warren Perso, which if people jump on YouTube and have a look, they'll sort of get the vibe of what Warren Perso is about. But Tony's been a really great supporter from the outset. We've worked together a couple of times, and he's been really, really forthcoming with lots of great work for us, so that's been great.
And so how many people were involved this time?
It's quite I think we're about to top the quarter century, about 25 or so.
Wow, okay.
With a couple of pending outliers that may or may not turn up, but put a few oars in the water around the place trying to sort of get people involved for the third one, if not the second, and sort of starting to stockpile work as we sort of hit a fairly substantial number for the second one, I think, in terms of page count, that might be enough, I think.
Is there a problem with you saying no to people? Is this what I'm It sounds like, look, you really want to get something happening here, obviously, yes, and it's starting to work. I can see the potential and it really taking off, of course, but it is hard to say, turn people away.
It is hard to say no. Yeah. I've been trying to curate things, and sort of if that's something that I can see the potential in, we'll, you know, work on it back and forth a little bit and sort of see if we can bash it into shape for something in the, you know, subsequent issues. Sort of had a, you know, I've known the core group of guys quite a long time now, and we sort of had a policy that we definitely wanted to curate it and, you know, make the decision as we move forward as to who was going to be involved in it, purely based on, you know, keeping it in the family to a certain extent. And lots of great people outside of that too. So
yeah, well, it's a big sort of thing. Definitely.
Get back into the community a bit. Yeah, with sort of like a Sasha Brinning's come on board. He's great. Emmett, as you know, decided to write some things for us, which are going to be a little bit incendiary, I think. Which is exciting.
Watch out.
Well, you know him, cheeky Irish bugger.
I know, and he knows his beer. So
yeah, he's a dark horse.
He's a dark brew, yes.
If you unleash him on a little bit of theology.
Oh, boy,
so, yeah.
Strap
in for that one.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic getting to know him and working with him and his segment that he does for Sci-Fi and Squeam, Osmosis, has been
fantastic. Yes, he's a great
fantastic.
Voice for Australian comics in general. Like, he does a great job.
I just wouldn't be able to do what he does. It's like, you're crazy, Emmett. Keep doing it.
Yeah,
keep doing it. It's good. So, look, the Mad Max Road Warrior images or homage really does interest me. It's really, I'm thinking, almost breathed a sigh of relief when I saw that a couple of weeks back. Is that what people can expect more of that too? And
The Mad Max thing, I think that's the images I was doing was just messing around a bit with some ideas for layouts for what we're going to be doing with the Mad Max Museum interview. But I've got ideas about, definitely getting down the path and getting a few more Australian filmmakers involved in as writers. I think it's a nice little middle ground. We've talked about a few people who have specific ideas for short stories or comics or whatever, potentially coming in and using it as a, not necessarily as a springboard to get pitch in front of someone to shoot something, but as a nice little way of taking a story that might not otherwise get financed and getting something out there. And on the other hand, sort of definitely got Richard Lowenstein and people like that in my sights to have a chat to and sort of get some, you know, get some insight into things like Dogs in Space and those sorts of things and the Melbourne punk scenes, a big one that we're sort of looking at.
Excellent.
And sort of delving into that direction as well.
Wow.
We've got my old mate Neil Blanche writing about Martin Sharp, who just passed away.
Yeah, I know.
So, there's a nice range of things that, you know, people don't know about them. They're certainly
That's the thing. A lot of these things are just, well, the people are leaving the planet, you know, so to speak, and a lot of these things aren't, people don't know about it. Like I said to someone, a young person the other day, oh, that reminds me of Razorback, you know, that great Aussie classic movie, and they were like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you know.
Well, I can actually, you know, it's being released on Blu-ray in May. I'm working on that right now.
All right.
So Razorback's coming.
Oh, I love that film. It's like
it's beautiful. It's a
MTV. MTV movie in the outback or something.
Yeah,
it's
astonishing.
Crazy.
Like, really quite surreal. Did a beautiful job with that.
Oh, yeah. I wish they'd done more.
A really formative film where it was sort of, you know, that was our Jaws to a large extent. That and Dark Age. John
Wow, okay, yeah, there's some good stuff from the 80s and 90s, and Australian film culture was really quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, well, we actually had license to do a few interesting things, quite the romantic comedies and remakes.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Pass.
No comment.
Yeah, jumping right across to something else. Sure. In your opinion, and this is probably too hard to do, but in your opinion, who do you think is the greatest comics creator of all time?
Well, I'm going to do a two-parter on that, purely when you're going to ask me. I had time to think about it. and it might tie into hopefully getting something in the works for down the line. My introduction to Australian comics was Nightside in the Rock in 1989, which was written and drawn by Bodine America, inked by Jason Poloff. And that was sort of like that was what alerted me to the sort of Bodine. I don't think he'd mind admitting that a lot of his work was heavily inspired by Alan Moore at that point.
Okay, yep.
But it was sort of the first delvings that I saw as a 12-year-old into those more sort of adult comics, because I was sort of getting the reprints of the DC comic stuff mainly at that stage. Bodine stuff sort of opened the door to actually getting into a comic shop, and I think the first thing I actually read was The Killing Joke off the back of the Batman film, and sort of following that sort of more adult comic thing down the rabbit hole. So it would be a cross between the initial contact with Australian stuff being Bodine, funnily enough, and then Alan Moore's pretty much mastery of genre and the form, I guess, because I really started to get into stuff like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and the amount of, you know, the amount of prose that he'd present as part of that package, or sort of the, you know, playing with different aspects of the format, doing quite detailed and extensive sorts of footnotes and things like that, covering everything from humor comics in the early 80s through his little like blip into superheroes, which wasn't quite as long as everyone seems to remember, about 5 years, I think. And then, yeah, just the sort of complete autonomy and sort of, you know, whatever you think of his cranky old man status now, just the overall influence. I'm going to go Alan Moore.
Yeah, no, I can understand that completely. Yeah, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it's V for Vendetta as well.
Yeah. Sort of veering out into Lost Girls territory and all the rest. And then actually doing quite interesting things with Rob Liefeld characters in the mid-90s that actually sort of took what he probably couldn't do at DC and let him play around with that sort of stuff.
He's very significant, I think. It's hard to... it's almost sort of like the Godhead.
Yes.
You know, because he's got the big beard anyway. It's like...
Yeah, he's got the messianic thing as well, which is obviously, you know, a big one as well.
Yeah, I just have an image of him sitting on a cushion barefoot with that big beard.
Yeah, so I'll give Alan the big thumbs up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's hard not to. His influence is in film
as
well.
It's a bit of a gimme, but yeah.
Yeah, excellent. I guess we've already spoken about some of the plans, but the rest of 2014, sure. You're going to do it four times. It's a quarterly.
Four times?
Yeah.
Yes. A few ideas about the second half of the year that are sort of nascent, so I won't sort of boom anything by talking about it now, but maybe some sort of looking at some multimedia music-related things in terms of exhibitions / gigs and things like that with friends in the music industry to sort of tie the whole thing together a bit more, because music was also a fairly major part of the whole thing coming together. There are a lot of sort of soundtrack options and things like that that are sort of sitting on the sidelines waiting to happen. Coming into the second issue, some other fun stuff with Tony especially that hopefully takes off, that will be a bit more of a multimedia thing as well. So just crossing fingers we can get all the schedules to come together so we can get that happening. Yeah, and then just onwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot going on for 2014 for you and for all the projects you've got going under the banner of Homebrew Vampire Bullets. So
everyone's very excited.
So yeah, it's bringing it all in.
To wind up again.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations for doing that. It's a big thing to do.
It is an undertaking.
But if anyone can do it, it sounds like you've been in training.
Yeah, I think it's been for the montage. It's been the last 10 years of
getting ready for it. Yeah,
sort of, getting everything in order and then off we'll go.
It becomes a work in progress, you know.
It became something that was blindingly obvious a year ago that wasn't quite so obvious in those preceding years. It was sort of a hallelujah moment.
That sort of eureka, that eureka thing.
Yes.
All right, so where can people go if you can just let us know the website links and so on?
The Facebook is just one word, Homebrew Vampire Bullets, which is where you'll find the majority of the links to the digital and print-on-demand versions of the book.
Yep.
We're working on getting books into stores for the next one. It's been a little bit of a sort of testing the model and seeing how things go. But that's definitely our intention, to have a few more hard copies on the ground when the next one is released. Probably easiest just to follow the links from the website, which is also homebrewvampireports.com, to the Twitter, SoundCloud, Redbubble, whatever else is out there. If you'd like to buy a T-shirt or anything like that, I'm not going to oversell that. Yeah. But there's some lovely pieces of artwork, print-wise and all the rest there too.
Oh, so they're for sale too if you want,
There's nice prints from the five or six of the stories. There's a great Matthew Dunn piece, a Louis Joyce, Harold Holt's quite beautiful.
Oh, cool.
Aaron McKenna's and Justin Hamilton's Devils in the Details print. Doug Holgate's Maralinga.
That's a good
one. Scott Fraser's Shadow Rumble. Some really beautiful work there. So if you hit the red bubble, they're there.
Yeah, there's a lot happening there. That's good.
There is, yes.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, just before we do let you go, about the woman in prison aspect.
That was an alignment, I think.
Look, no, I actually have to say, I confess, I really love those sort of films.
Well, Mark Salaam's from Adelaide.
Is that
wrong? I guess we've got to factor that in as well. I don't think some of it's wrong.
No. I
think politically they were on target.
Have you seen the ones they made in Indonesia, the ones that they...
the bamboo made and stuff.
The bamboo cage and
it could be our secrets, all right.
It's too late
now. But the women in prison content will be 50% in the next one. They're out of prison now anyway, and Scott Fraser and Kate Moon's Bolt, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, look, there's Orange is the New Black, there's Wentworth.
It's
happening. Yeah, it is. Get your overalls on, ladies.
On the pulse.
Get those overalls on, and I'm looking forward to the launch. I've got this terrible image now.
There's our uniform sorted out for all public appearances from now on. Prison Orange.
Yep.
Cool.
All right, lovely. Thank you very much for talking to us, Garth Jones. Probably one of the biggest comic entrepreneurs I've seen for a while. Does some work as well.
Outrageous.
It is.
Outrageous.
That's great. Speaking to us here on Sci-Fi and Scream, thank you very much.
Cheers, Sonia. Thank you.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-Fi and Scream, be afraid, be very afraid, on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.